A biblical woman doesn't live for herself. She lives according to the word of her Savior and at the mercy of her Heavenly Father.
Adrian Dorr Hines, speaking at the 2016 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
She holds Christ to his promise that he will forgive her on account of his cross, and she moves forward in faith, trusting that she will care little for herself and a lot for her Lord and for those that he has placed around her. She is both humble and hardy, an armchair theologian, and a discerning believer. She cares for her home and her husband, her children and friends, and she knows that this work is not always glamorous.
You can listen to Adrian's presentation, Making the Case for Biblical Womanhood, on an audio DVD from the Making the Case Conference. We'll send it to you for a donation of $300. Find out more and order by clicking the DVD logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org.
So many times, non-college educated white males have voted Republican. They voted against their own economic interest because of guns, because of gays, and because of God, the three G's.
Those who portray themselves as victims soon come to perceive themselves as victims and eventually paralyze themselves as victims.
Miracles always are never the thing. In fact, miracles are always part of the support system of a message.
In an instance like that, you can just simply say, don't be afraid. These men have come here to take our lives, but they're too late. Our lives already belong to Christ.
Southern Illinois bird watchers love Issues, etc.
I do not know what I would do if I were a principal of a public junior high school or a superintendent of schools, including high schools and junior high schools. What do you do? What would you do, especially even with regard to elementary schools, if you get a letter like they did from the Department of Justice counseling you, not just counseling you, telling you, dictating to you how you ought to deal with intersex students and transgender students, what kind of policies you need to put in place, what kind of facilities you must provide in order to protect their civil rights? Sounds to me like a nightmare scenario for any school administrator, but that's exactly what we found ourselves in. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live this Wednesday afternoon, the 3rd of August. We're going to be talking about a Department of Justice letter to public schools about transgender students. Dr. Jennifer Oback Morse of the Ruth Institute will be our guest. Then we're going to get our weekly update on the November elections with Mark Hemingway of the Weekly Standard and Molly Hemingway, senior editor of The Federalist. Dr. Jennifer Oback Morse is a regular guest, founder and president of the Ruth Institute. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities. She's author of several books, including her latest, The Sexual Revolution and Its Victims, and a recent column for The Blaze titled, Under Obama, Transgenderism is Not a Medical Condition, It's a Political Stepping Stone. Jennifer, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Todd.
What if you were a principal or superintendent of schools in a public school and you got this letter from the Department of Justice about transgendered students? How would you react?
Well, the first thing you need to understand is that this is a dear colleague letter, and it does not follow the normal procedures for making regulatory rules. The regulatory agencies are supposed to go through a whole series of proposing regulations, taking public comment, and only then actually promulgating the rules. And this dear colleague letter completely bypasses that whole process. And so the first thing I would do if I were a school administrator is get on the phone to the attorney general of my state and tell them to get this off our back, because this is not legally binding and it should not be held as legally binding.
What does the letter say?
Well, that's a very good question. It says a number of things. First of all, it's interesting what it doesn't say, Todd. Let me tell you what it doesn't say. It never mentions children who are intersex, okay? Intersex is a very specific, medically diagnosable condition. There are several different possible conditions, and I link to the Intersex Society of North America's website in my column, because these things do happen. Children are born with, you know, some kind of some unusual combination of chromosomes, or some kind of abnormality with their secondary sex characteristics, their genitalia, and so on. And so that's a diagnosable medical condition. Well, this letter doesn't say anything about children like that. And it also never uses the term gender dysphoria. And gender dysphoria is the term that describes the psychological condition of being, somehow upset with your biological sex versus how you feel, how you experience yourself to be. So that's a diagnosable condition. What the letter says is a transgender person, in order to trigger these rights, a transgender person does not need to have a diagnosis or a treatment plan going on from a doctor. And that's the key to understanding what this document is really all about, Todd. This is not about medicine or psychology. If it were, all you do is say, okay, every kid who's got this type of condition, we need to see a letter from your doctor, and we'll work out what to do about it. But that's exactly what these guidelines do not do.
So what kind of scenarios can you picture in the actual school setting? Because these aren't just, theoretical ideas. Administrators, teachers, all of in schools have to, at some point, at least at the desire of the Department of Justice, implement something like this. What would it look like?
Well, the other peculiarity of this thing is that it says, I want to read this to you because you won't believe it unless I read it to you. The departments interpret Title IX of the Civil Rights Act to require that when a student or the student's parent or guardian, as appropriate, notifies the school administration that the student will assert a gender identity that differs from previous reputations or representations or records, the school will then begin treating the student consistent with the student's gender identity. So that means, the way I read that, that means a student without the knowledge or permission of their parents can go in and say, I represent myself as a different gender, and now you have to do something about it. You, the whole school, has to do something about it. I can picture a lot of very strange scenarios coming down the pike. If you've got a student who, I can picture a high school student who's just ornery and trying to cause trouble. I mean, I think a moment's thought will picture plenty of those types of scenarios. But I can also picture children who are disturbed and who see this possibility as something that empowers them, makes them feel special, makes them feel important, gives them a way to, irritate their parents in some way, and their parents don't even have to be informed. So there's no bound. The problem with these regulations or guidelines or this dear colleague letter, whatever the legal status of this thing turns out to be, Todd, the problem with it is there's absolutely no boundaries on it whatsoever. Any child of any age, there's no limitation on age. Any child of any age can walk in and say they want to assert themselves as a different gender. And the Department of Justice gives you no guidance about what to do if you think, hey, this is not right. You're not allowed to question them. That would be unlawful discrimination. You have to accommodate that student, which means letting them go use the bathroom in the locker room that they say they belong in.
So at the very least, you're saying this letter creates a situation, if implemented, that is just rife for abuse.
Oh, no question about it. No question. It's rife for disrupting the educational process. It's rife for abuse. It's rife for confusion. And the other thing that I think is going to flow out of this is that teachers are going to be expected to use transgender-friendly language. So, for some time, we've been concerned that teachers can't talk about mothers and fathers, and they can't have a special day where they make cards for their mothers. We can't have a Mother's Day card or Father's Day celebration or anything like that. Now it's to the point where you can't use the word boys and girls. And you can't say, and even in health class, you can't say women have eggs and produce babies because they have eggs, and men have sperm. And so the man's sperm and the woman's egg come together, and that's how babies produce. They're not allowed to talk like that, Todd. So they have to say persons with ovaries produce eggs, persons with testicles produce sperm. They're not allowed to say boy and girl, male and female. That's what's coming down the pike at us. And if you think that is not something that's rife for confusion and creating confusion in children's minds, destabilizing the identity, the gender identity of children who have no reason to be disturbed or destabilized, you're simply kidding yourself if you think that that's a harmless set of pedagogical norms.
You mentioned that both intersex and gender dysphoria, are those terms are missing from the letter. Why is that?
Well, I think my theory is that they don't want to bring those things up right away. They want to be able to fall back on that and say, well, not everybody fits into the gender binary if you bring it up. So I wanted to bring that up at the beginning to say those are people who do have some challenges, who do have some issues, and they need, those students need more privacy and they need more parental involvement, but this letter gives them less of each. And so I think that what the, which is completely wrong, you know, they're doing the wrong thing for those kids, in my opinion. The reason they're using the term transgender and nothing else is because transgender is the most fluid term. Transgender is the term that doesn't require medical diagnosis. It's a term that you can define yourself into or out of. And in my opinion, what this is it is a political term. Transgenderism is a political term. And that's the key to understanding the whole thing.
Jen, it's kind of ironic. Social religious conservatives like you and like me are often labeled as anti-science. Does this Department of Justice document make any scientific case for its recommendations?
No, it really doesn't. It doesn't make any scientific case for its recommendation, and it's avoiding using the proper scientific terms. It's using the politicized the terms that are used and advocated by the most extreme versions of the radical transgender movement, which, by the way, as you and I have talked about before, not everybody else within the larger LGBT movement agrees with the transgender agenda. There's a lot of dispute about it, you know, even among that group of people. And yet somehow first graders are supposed to just buckle under and participate and be part of the radical form of the transgender agenda. We're all supposed to sit here and say, well, that's just fine.
One of the things that I find disturbing, and I'm sure you do as well, and you mentioned it before, and that is this envisions a scenario in which a child could, say, show up to seventh grade and say, I was biologically born a boy, but I've decided today that I'm going to be a girl. And no one is under any obligation to consult with the parents on that situation.
Yes. That's right. That's right. And, you know, we know that that's not a perfect scenario because we already know that the guidelines that, well, not just guidelines, regulations having to do with contraception and abortion, the school nurse is not allowed to tell parents if their daughter is going on the pill or going to have an abortion. That's under Medicaid rules, you know. So it's not at all far-fetched to see that this is where the federal government is going with this. They want the ability to create this fantasy ideology of theirs, the sexual revolutionary fantasy ideology, with as little interference from the parents as possible, and to get the kids into it as easily as possible. And that's the key to understanding this definition of transgenderism that they've used here. It's a definition of transgenderism that has no medical foundation to it whatsoever. It has no requirement of a medical diagnosis. It has no requirement of a psychological diagnosis or corroboration that this is, yes, this is how the child really feels. Yes, this is a child's reality or whatever it is. Nothing like that is present. And by the way, I'm not saying I agree with everything that the American Psychological Association has to say about this matter. That's not the point. My point is they're making it as easy as possible for an impressionable child define themselves into the transgender movement. And then adults, their parents, the teachers, the school administrators, all feel that they must do what this child wants them to do, or the federal government is going to, you know, land on them with both feet. And that is a situation all by itself. That's not a good situation. That's not a healthy developmental situation for a child because, you know, let's face it, children are immature. Immaturity is rampant among the young. That's just a fact. And some kids, if you got a child who's ornery or you got a kid who's disturbed, some kids think it's really cool to get adults into trouble. And they feel empowered by getting kids into trouble, by getting adults into trouble, right? And I, as a foster parent, I saw plenty of those types of situations. And that's what the Department of Justice is inflicting on every school district in America. And I really hope that your listeners, wherever they may be, will do something at their local school board level to stop this from going into place. I have already heard from people who are battling with their school boards. I've heard about it in Fairfax County, Virginia. I've heard about it in Omaha, Nebraska. I've heard about it in Hawaii. There are grassroots groups of people getting together to say, we are not going to accept this in our school. And 23 states already, at last count, 23 states are suing the Obama administration to put a stop to this, to say, these regulations are not valid. We're not going to follow them. Go away. You know, stop trying to bully us. And people, your listeners need to be on the forefront of battling this stuff because it can be won. They're counting on nobody fighting back. Right? They're counting on just coming in with their steamroller, doing whatever they want, and nobody's going to stop them and having no pushback whatsoever because that's what they're used to doing. Well, it's time to put a stop to that. If this won't get you off the couch, America, nothing will get you off the couch.
Folks, I highly recommend that you read and share the Ruth Institute's statement on the Department of Justice guidelines to ensure the civil rights of transgender students. You'll find it at issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse is founder and president of the Ruth Institute. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, author of several books, including her latest, The Sexual Revolution and Its Victims, and a recent column for The Blaze titled, Under Obama, Transgenderism is Not a Medical Condition. It's a political stepping stone. Jennifer, thanks for being our guest.
You're welcome, Todd.
When we come back, our weekly update on the November elections with Mark and Molly Hemingway.
Are you tired of working nights, weekends, and odd hours trying to cover your bases at home just to make ends meet? At the Cleaning Authority, we call that the multi-job shuffle, and we want to end that for you right now. We'll train you in our proven, efficient cleaning methods, and you'll be partnered to work in pre-qualified homes. Call 314-416-8117 and walk away from the multi-job shuffle with a future in our St. Louis office, 314-416-8117.
Are you tired of working out at big box gyms? You'll find quality personal training and qualified instruction at Performance Fitness in Edwardsville. You can even work out for a full 30 days before making a commitment to join. Find out more at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. Performancefitness618.com.
Talk radio for the Christian worldview. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The sixth century. The 12th century. The 16th century. The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.